better put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
One of the things we got to talk about last night's game is the emergence of Jimmy Witt.
Oh, you don't want to talk about the foul count being plus 20 for Arkansas?
Never mind.
I just figured... Everybody wanted to gripe about the refereeing last night.
I joked about that earlier for Arkansas, right? Will Wade.
Right? The free throw disparity. I'm sure we're going to get lots of calls about that, right?
Are you okay?
Sure, we're going to get lots of calls about that.
You're shaking.
The foul
right
count
now.
Was plus 20 for was in Arkansas's favor. 20. Surely people are going to complain about the refereeing.
I thought Arkansas was the fortunate of some calls last night.
One call today about refereeing, yeah.
So.
Not one.
Jimmy Witt Will Wade didn't seem too happy with it post-game.
Well, I wouldn't either if I was minus 20 in the foul. Free throws were, 54 to 23? That's how some people look at it. But yeah.
So did you think it was bad officiating last night?
No, I just thought LSU was more aggressive early, particularly early in the game. Played with their hands a lot more.
Oh, no, but not on offense, because they weren't aggressive on offense.
No, I mean,
weird.
Defensively, they were putting their hands on Arkansas shooters a lot.
But you thought it was a good, well-officiated game last night?
I had no problem with the way it was officiated. I'm just saying that's how some people look at it. It had to be bad because the disparity was so wide, right?
What about the trash talk tech that was called on Watford?
Automatic. Easy. Easiest call of the night.
Why?
Because you can't taunt. I mean, taunting and unsporting
behavior. So you're telling me that you don't think anyone on the Arkansas bench said anything to him
and
got that call?
I don't know.
That's a Bush League call.
It's automatic. I know you're a youngin' that thinks that you ought to be able to just go out there and run your mouth and say what you want. Unsporting behavior of that nature is going to be dealt with.
Mason Jones did the exact...
Taunting is automatic.
Mason Jones did the exact same thing later in the game. They didn't call anything. The ref was sitting right next to him. That's a Bush League call.
Well, that's your opinion.
I mean, this is the problem that we have with officiating in sports today, and it's just players today. Everyone's too nice to each other. Last night was... no reason should have Tech have been called on Watford at all. Let them
talk.
We
don't know what he said. But
who cares? Let them.
Well, you don't. Yet nobody. Everybody cares. Well, until there's a fight, until the bench is clear, until that happens, what instigated all that?
How often does that happen, Tommy?
Where does it begin, though? Where does stuff like that begin?
See, do you want them to
issues?
Just
where does issues within a game begin? It's talking.
Do you want them to completely check their emotions and just be mute on the court? That's not fun. That's not basketball.
This isn't the rec league over at the Y either.
Tommy, what was the most popular era of NBA
basketball?
This is prison
league. This is the SEC.
What was the most popular era of NBA basketball?
For me, early 90s, late 80s, when Bill Laimbeer, Dennis Rodman, Isaiah Thomas, the Bird with the Celtics,
but
Magic.
God forbid, Tommy, there was fights. There was trash talking.
That's the NBA. This isn't the NBA. This is college basketball.
Tommy, you can't just limit these guys to not have celebrations and stuff during the game or talk a little bit. You can't confine
them to that. You don't know what he
that.
Said.
Who cares? They were... Okay. The Arkansas... Do you think the Arkansas bitch was just silent? They didn't say anything.
I don't know. And guess what? Neither do you.
You literally saw them talking to the players.
But you don't know what was being said.
So
you're making assumptions.
The Arkansas bench was like, hey, good shot, Watford. And then he just turned and then cussed him out. That's what was happening.
I don't know. And guess what? Neither do you.
Yeah, I'm just... the Arkansas
you're
bench
making
just said
assumptions.
Rainbows. No, I'm not making assumptions. I know for a fact that they didn't pump sunshines and rainbows up Watford's butt to get him to say something to the bench.
Don't know.
You can't see that,
then what
you're smiling
then what was
right
said?
Now.
I don't know. I mean,
it wasn't rainbow and sunshine.
Well, give us the transcript there, since you know.
I don't know, but
exactly.
I know. Okay,
thank you.
Okay, listen. You're smart. You're the general manager of this station. You know it wasn't kind what they said to him to get him to say something back to a Tech. Is that fair? Can you at least say that?
Again, you're assuming
oh
things.
Oh, my gosh. You can't even say that. Can
you're
you really?
Assuming it.
Yeah, man. I can't deal with you right now. Golly, Tommy apparently doesn't like people to talk trash or anything. He's not fun. Let's go to David in South Arkansas. David, you're on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, gentlemen. Watching that game last night, first of all, I will say there's a difference between just talking and chirping and trash talking. I remember years ago, Arkansas was playing LSU in the conference tournament, and LSU's coach, I think it was Brady at the time, and an Arkansas player almost got into it because you could see the LSU coach look at him and go, "What did you say?" And it almost precipitated bench clearing. I think you can cross the line, when, especially when you're down by 15 or 20, you have no business talking trash to anybody like the LSU guy did.
But on another question about that time, they were, is an 18-point
difference. On another question about officiating, when I was growing up, if you dove for a ball on the floor, your feet left the floor, you were rolling around, it was called traveling. I notice now I've seen less contact guys going after a fumble on a football field, and the refs just call jump ball. Is it not traveling anymore? Is it not a foul if people just diving in, piling on, grabbing, you know, scraping? And also, I'll admit there were times LSU would be called for a foul. I'm like, that wasn't a foul. He didn't even touch him. And then LSU goes to that press at the end of the game, and they're mauling our guys, and no fouls called. It's just inconsistent. I don't know. If it's a foul, it's a foul. It's like baseball. If it's a strike, it's a strike. But the whole thing about trash talk, I see young kids do it. I see, you know, high school, college kids. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Look at Kansas, Kansas State, what happened up there.
It's one example.
You say NBA. I remember Malice in the Palace and all that. Anyway, thanks, guys. At least we won. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, David. Yeah, thanks for the call. So Tommy's under the impression that Watford was not provoked last night by the Arkansas.
He's down 18. Close your mouth and go play. Quit chirping.
I've seen Mason Jones do the exact same. And I love watching Mason Jones.
What did Mason Jones say?
You're right. He just said, hey, guys. I mean, come on, Tommy. You're smarter than that to assume that he's not talking. He's not saying nice things to the bitch. And you're smart enough to assume. But you can know like this.
No, you don't know.
Okay.
I have heard positive things between players and benches before. I have heard coaches say things to an opponent that were sportsmanlike, not unsporting.
That happens all the time in competitive
nature sports. It's not the norm, but it does happen. Your assumptions can't be taken as solid gospel.
Okay. If you want to stick to that, that's fine. If you want to stand on that hill.
But, well, I mean, you're just of the mindset they should be allowed to trash talk and do anything they want to drag the game down, and I just can't go with that. No,
I just think that in today's society, when it comes to sports, there's too much kindness, there's too much friendship and stuff, and when you limit that, when you won't let players literally who hit a three-point or something in their face and say something, regardless if you think it's profane or not. That's my opinion.
Do when it escalates?
Okay.
Because it's going to escalate.
Okay, I'll give you this. Outside of the Kansas State game, what other fights have you seen this year?
I haven't seen any other fights in college basketball this year. Where do you think that began? You think that just began there at the end? Erupted?
What about NBA?
I don't know. I don't watch NBA.
It's not like they're that prevalent. I don't know. We can agree
the rules that are in place is what keeps that from happening.
No, trash talk goes on all the time in the game. It's just when a ref decides, I'm going to call this just to call it. So,
I just know that's an automatic. So,
okay, then Mason. If that's the case, then Mason Jones should have gotten a tech last night because he was chirping at the bench too. If that's the case, I was getting flashbacks.
Gotta be seen though. So,
and the ref was right there, but okay. I was getting flashbacks last night of Keith Hornsby's shot in 2015. It was funny. Bob Holt asked Eric Musselman after the game. He's been to two senior nights in Bud Walton, one when he came as an LSU assistant in 2015, and he drew the play up for Keith Hornsby, who hit that corner shot over Michael Qualls to end it. It was just, Tommy, they kept missing free throws. What did they end at? They ended their percentage at 67%, 36 for 54. At one point, they were 75-plus, and they just kept bricking. Like, there was a stretch, I don't know if I have the scoring stretch, where they missed, like, six or seven straight. They're just throwing up bricks, and people are just groaning, and
20 of 32 just in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable to see how quickly they almost, like, they didn't fall apart, so they luckily that wasn't the case. But, Tommy, that was close last night. It was
uncomfortable with 4 minutes to go, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, because as an Arkansas fan, you're never comfortable to, like, the game's over and they've certified the results.
Yeah. So.
You know, so last night, yeah, that was, when it got down to about 7 with 3 minutes to go, you're like, I mean, then they had a 3 rattle in and out that could have made it 4.
Correct.
Then you're wondering, all right, you peeing down one leg here? You know, what's happening? What's going on here?
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Jason is in Fort Smith. Jason, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, guys. Hey, Tommy. We all know that you're an assistant, right, for basketball, football?
Allegedly, yeah.
Yeah. The other night you refereed a game in Alma, mm-hmm. and you gave the coach a technical. Mm-hmm. What does a coach have to do to get a technical in your book?
I mean, it varies. Sometimes they ask for one, you know. Sometimes a coach will tell you because they want to get their team going, hey, give me a technical. So generally,
yeah, but when you're down 30, like Alma was to Greenwood the other night, I mean, he's not going to ask for a technical when he's down that many points.
You might be surprised.
But anyway, when a team like last night, when we played LSU, when they're down 23, and they're starting to cut into the lead, a player is going to mouth a little bit. And I agree. I think the bench was not, you know, talking rainbows and sunshines. I think he was trash talking. I think the bench was trash talking. And I think the refs saw him say something to the bench, and that's what sparked the technical. It's always the second player that gets the technical, mm-hmm. not the first.
You're right on that, Jason. So, and I agree with you 100%. And people are asking, which side are you on, Tommy? I'm on the side of letting the players trash talk. Now, you're against that. You've come out adamantly and said that. But I just think, again,
well, it's just a rule.
It's a competitive nature, though. But it's a rule. It's a rule that doesn't get enforced often. That's why there aren't many technicals called on players in college basketball, and why you still see players trash talk all the time throughout college basketball, college football, whatever. If that wasn't the case, then it wouldn't be fun because there's no competitive nature out of that. You have to have a little edge to you when you play sports. And sometimes that edge bubbles over a little bit.
I'm just telling you, it was a point of emphasis from the beginning of the year. It was something that conferences and supervisors and officials were told to deal with, you know, and it's not something they're going to relax more. What you're advocating is relax the sportsmanship rules. That's not going, the powers that be, the power brokers of any game and any sport are not going to relax sportsmanship rules.
Yeah, no.
Because it is a bad look for your league when you have something, or your sport, when you have something like Kansas State happen. It's just a bad look all around. Not just for your schools or your conference, the entire sport. It's damaging. So sportsmanship rules are never going to be relaxed, because the people that are in charge, the people at the very top of the food chain, don't see it the way you see it.
That's fair, and I couldn't agree with you more, because
what you're advocating for has no upside. What is the upside to allowing more edge and trash talking and unsporting? What is the upside? What is the positive return on investment there? What is the dividend for the sport? Nothing. There's nothing.
So if that's
what is the negative? If you have a fight and a bench clearing brawl like you had in Kansas State,
you keep going back to one example.
Most obvious example from this season.
But we're already at the end of the season. There's only been one that you can think of.
It's one too many, right? You think there should be more fights in the game?
I didn't say that.
Well, what are you saying?
I'm saying I don't want these players to be like robots on the court. Ooh, I made a three, must walk down the other end of the court. That's not what I want. Like, no one wants that. You can ask, I would think you'd be on my side. You're 44 years old. I'm supposed to be the young millennial that is scared to say anything, is scared to show anything. I would think you'd be wanting to get back to like it was in the olden days, in the 80s and 90s you referred to, which basketball was fun to watch.
That's the NBA. We're talking college basketball.
There was So Larry Bird was just mute in college in 79? He didn't say anything? You had some of the other players?
Apparently out of diapers. I don't know.
It's changed across sports. That doesn't mean it's bad or good. It's just changed across sports. All right, let's go to I don't think we've done David and Van Buren. David, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey guys, I would call me on this. I think the reaction gets a technical foul, right? I think if you're down 18 or whatever it was in that scenario, I think, you know, rainbows and butterflies, something as simple as that being said, could get a reaction that leads to a technical. They could have, you're down 18, someone's like, oh, good job, bud. You made it three down 18. It's late in the game. That alone could set him off. And I think that you can't just assume that they're cussing him out, that even the rainbows and butterflies remarks could set off guys to say something or do something to get a technical.
Just running your mouth down 18 ought to be enough, right?
Oh, I'm not saying the timing. I'm not saying the timing of Watford was smart. I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
I mean, that's like the guy that makes a sack in a football game. Thanks for the call there, David. Mm-hmm. That's like this is one thing that just irritates me more than anything in sports. Guy, you know, we see this in college, pros, everywhere. Your team's down 25, 30, whatever, in the second half of a football game, and a guy finally breaks through, gets his first tackle for loss or sack in the backfield, and he wants to get up and do some kind of dance and. Like he's calf roped somebody,
and they're down
4 touchdowns with 3 minutes to go in the game.
So I love
that. Just that ought to be that to me just irritates me. Maybe that's the old man in me.
So I love Deshaun Watson. He's one of my favorite players. Not only to watch in college, was he at Clemson, but also to watch it with the Houston Texans and what he's doing in the NFL. I think it was 2 years ago when they were playing the Colts in the playoffs. He did the arrow first down after everyone. They're down like 21 or 28. And I love this guy. But I'm sitting there watching this game. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? It's the fourth quarter. You guys are down like 28 and you're still doing the first down stuff. Get the ball and go. So I get the timing aspect of Watford. That I understand.
Yeah, you're down 18.
I agree with you on that. All I'm saying is I don't want players to be restricted. Now, if you start saying racial stuff or stuff like that, that I understand. I doubt anything racial was coming from the Arkansas bench. Again, I've
seen more player technicals in the college games I work, more called for those type of things and those type of words being used than probably any other player technicals this year.
I don't mind.
So don't think for a minute inappropriate words that are racially charged. And generally it's minorities talking to minorities, but don't, and we know what I'm talking about here without getting into that word.
BAN, that's like, I've heard that before, BAN, right. And figure out the acronym.
Right, so that's something else the NCAA wants gone, and they don't want that word used at all by anyone in any context on the floor. And if you think that's not still a problem, you're wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I've been, even as a white dude, I've been called that on playing basketball before. And I remember, you know, it's funny, you remember when it was either Andrew or Harrison, Aaron Harrison, when they lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four. In the press conference, he didn't realize his mic was on, and the guy asked a question about Frank Kaminsky, and he was mic'd up saying that. Now, if that was a white dude that said that, he'd be screwed, but it's obviously not people don't take it as big of a deal if an African-American player says that. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Chance is in Fort Smith. Chance, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, so is this Champ? I was just going to call in and say... I think I agree with Ty on this one. I like when the guys are fired up. It shows competitive spirit to me and stuff. At the end of the game, they're shaking hands anyway, you know. That's the sportsmanship, you know, that's just taught, you know, throughout the game. But them trash-talking a little bit during the game, I feel like that's just a competitive nature and playing the game. And so I kind of agree with Ty on this one. I like kind of seeing the fire in the boys. And like I said, at the end of the game, they're shaking hands anyway. And I just want to say, great win last night. It's always good when we beat LSU. And I'll leave on that.
You know, and thanks, Chance.
Yeah,
no one's appreciate saying they can't talk. Just don't be unsporting.
So, okay, if you're going to say that, then what is he supposed to say?
I mean, you can go in the bank without robbing it, right?
So... Could you give me a word? Let's say you hit a shot in my face. Let's say we're playing pickup basketball and there's or intramural basketball or something, and there's a ref, and you hit a shot in my face. You hit a deep three in my face, and you look at me you look at me. What are you going to say? What are you going to say that's, as a ref, what can you say to me?
If I hit another shot, I would say, there I go again. Or, you know, that's I just start counting. Oh, there's eight I've hit on you, Ty. There's so nine. That's 10 threes I've hit right over the top of you.
You're okay as long as it's not profanity or racial epithet. It's based on what you just said. Is that what you're leaning towards?
Well, I mean, that makes it less automatic. I'll put it that way. Yeah, okay. I mean, I think that's more acceptable. You start using profanity, you start trying to incite your opponent and trying to get a response by being unsporting, that has to be dealt with, right? I mean, what are you advocating for teaching kids that are watching the game, too? Think about
or listening right
think
now.
About the kids, Ty. Come on, think about the kids,
that's
man.
That's fair. I completely understand the racial epithet stuff. Say that I don't do that when I play basketball. I have known to get a little profane of times, especially with my buddies around. And
that's fine in the rec league. That's fine on a Sunday night when you're playing at the church gym. Shouldn't cuss in the church gym, by the way.
Yeah, that's bad thing.
But
I don't cuss in the church gym. I'm not allowed in the church gym.
You know, you're gonna go play at the city park. That's fine. But we ain't talking about that.
Okay. Well, based on the conversation we had leading up to this, I was under the assumption that you're against trash talk altogether. So you backed off that a little
bit.
Well,
I mean, someday, if you ever get in my golf group, there's plenty of needling, plenty of trash talk.
Okay.
But no one's cussing anybody.
You came out so vastly against this that I was under the impression.
You were like clay in my hands, or I could just mold you in any way then because you were so fired up about it.
Yeah, because this is a passionate subject that I'd like to talk about. Joe's in Fayetteville. You're on the Morning Rush, man.
I'm kind of a tie on this one. Like, what are some acceptable words? Like, do we have to keep it to things that you can say on the radio, or what is the limit there?
What's the seven? Is it the seven deadly
words? Ask the late George Carlin, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Now, but also, as far as how you're saying racial slurs or whatever you'd like to say for minorities saying to minorities, I don't know what to say there because it's not really disrespectful to each other. Like if we say that to each other, it's not really disrespectful. It's more of like hyping people up. Yeah, it's a little bit of trash talk, but at the same time, nobody's taking offense to it. But that's just I guess my disagreement there.
Appreciate the call, Joe. I think the N-word's probably the most disgusting word in our English language, to be honest. And so
be eradicated.
Any use of it, regardless if you're white, African American, Hispanic, I don't think it'd be used in general. So that's my take on that.
I agree with you on that.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Sonic's got $1.99 footlong Tony's. You're begging someone to order and bring you one a chili cheese dog here in the morning.
So I guess I could eat four of them if we factored it out. Because I ate eight of the regular ones, so that would be four of the... I'm not going to do that.
I don't think I want to see that again.
I'll put every dog in my back pocket. Oh, man, I would love to see you eat four of them before the 9 o'clock.
Jenkins, you weren't here when...
He did eat eight.
I did eat eight. And so
he wasn't right for about 3 days.
Yeah, that's eight little mini hot dogs.
Yeah, okay. Jenkins.
Two of these put together.
Yeah. Come on, buddy. I know.
Oh, you want to go there?
You have a master's. I don't have a master's. It's four times two is eight, so that's what it equals out to. All right,
like a chili dog to start your day.
Yeah. We're brought to you by NWA Gold and Silver this
morning. They're in Bentonville and they're in Fayetteville. The price of gold keeps rising. Now is the time to take your gold or silver coins, gold bars, estate jewelry, anything that you would like to liquidate and turn to cash. Now is the time at NWA Gold and Silver. They're also liquidating over $3 million worth of inventory right now from their stores in Bentonville and Fayetteville. Up to 70% off right now on Arkansas's biggest and best selection of fine jewelry. Over $3 million has to go. Engagement diamond rings, or diamond engagement rings, I should say. Diamond earrings, necklaces, pendants. It's all on sale right now. NWA Gold and Silver, 1130 North Walton in Bentonville, and in Nelson's Crossing by Jason's Deli in Fayetteville. Save up to 70% off and get the most for your gold right now at NWA Gold and Silver in Bentonville and in Fayetteville.
I want to get to a couple of audio clips that we heard from some of the guys last night. If you haven't checked out the press conference, you can always do that at hitthatline.com and our YouTube page. Andy Hodges does a great job with that. So Will Wade was very complimentary of Mason Jones, but he also said, had some great words to say about Jimmy Witt.
I know Mason Jones gets a lot of the credit, and he did a great job tonight scoring 36. But Witt just controlled the game, 26, 15, 5 assists. We just, for whatever, we can't guard him. We couldn't guard him at our place. We can't guard him here. He seems like, I don't know him at all, but just watching his press conference from Monday, he seems like an unbelievable kid, unbelievable person, and deserved to go out like that on senior night. I wish it wouldn't have been on us, but he was tremendous.
Tommy, I've told you this before. I really enjoy listening to Eric Musselman during press conferences, but if there's one player on that roster that I might like listening to more, it's Jimmy Witt. He is the most polished for, like, he's such an eloquent, polished speaker. I don't know if he has any, like, career paths or anything to pursue that, but if he does, he's going to be stinking good at it because he's tremendous when it comes to setting the tone and really explaining what's going on surrounding him and the basketball team.
You catch a little thing in there? I watched Jimmy Witt's press conference on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
That stood out to me in Will Wade's statement there. That now you're not just down there watching film, getting ready for the next team. You're not just reading scouting reports or looking at box scores. You know, in today's digital world, where everything's available at the push of a button on a computer or a tablet, he's watching the players and what they have to say in the Monday press conference. And
probably
I guess
hitthatline.com.
Possibly. I mean, I just find that interesting, the level that you would go to, because I don't think 15 or 20 years ago you're even given that a thought because it's not available.
Mm-hmm.
You might catch a clip on a newscast somewhere, but now that's just one more thing for coaches to check out. So that's just one more thing for, and this is the unfortunate part for us as fans, as media, as observers. That's just one more reason for a player or coach to be guarded in a Monday, not a post game. A Monday press conference to preview a matchup.
Correct.
2 days out.
Jimmy Witt
goes, one more reason not to say something.
Yeah, to keep it to keep yourself guarded.
Now so. We know the opponents are watching your Monday press conferences.
And there's always the conspiracy theory, the idea that the 5 or 10 minutes that you got to shoot in practice for football, that the opposing coaches in the SEC or the opposing non-conference teams you play, they look at that. And
we always think that's
garbage.
Well, yeah, clearly they're looking at this stuff.
Yeah, they decipher every single bit out of it. They can't because it's an advantage. It's not illegal to do. No. Like, well, Will Wade listening to Jimmy Witt talk, that's not illegal to do. Now, when you send someone illegally to the practice to video it for you or whatever, that's on the other hand. But what he's referring to is not. Jimmy Witt goes for 22 points in their first matchup in Baton Rouge and goes for 26 last night. Tommy, you set this stage for a potential rematch if the seeding played out how it could potentially if Arkansas was to get the 11.
Arkansas gets the 11 and LSU gets the 3, that LSU might not be the 3.
Or they could get, again, Auburn and LSU are tied right now, so Arkansas could get the 10 seed, and then they could meet in that game. The one you don't want Arkansas to get a 9 seed. Again, that's weird to say. Well, I say that. To Tom's point, Tom thinks that there's potential to get the biggest win you've had all season. And as I said before, you'd have a big-time road win at Indiana, a big-time home win against LSU, and a big-time neutral site win at Kentucky. But that's a big if, and I'm just of the belief that they would not be able to pull out that game.
Is LSU a big-time home win? Because it didn't qualify going as a quadrant one, right?
It's a quadrant two because they're 32.
So is it really big-time?
I would say it's their biggest.
Okay, I'll give you that. But is it really big time when it's not even a Q1 win?
It would.
That's really the problem with your resume.
It would have been a couple weeks ago, but
it would have been. But last night they were 32, mm-hmm. and to be a Q1, just to go over the metrics, it's got to be a team you're playing in the top 30 when you're at home, top 75 on the road.
I think Arkansas did move up in the net rankings. Yeah. I'm going to look at that. I think they're at 43. They were at, what, 47, 48 yesterday before that win. So you still have a chance to move up and do some damage in the SEC tournament. And again, the biggest, not the only, but the biggest parameter, the biggest guideline, the biggest ranking that you need to be concerned with as an Arkansas fan is the net ranking, because that's what the NCAA selection committee they said they pay attention to the most.
And I don't know, how much more can you climb? Okay, you beat A&M, you win a couple of games in the SEC tournament, you lose to one of the top four seeds in the quarterfinals. How much higher can you climb? What is the ceiling on the net ranking? I don't know. I'm just saying, if you're sitting at 36 or 7, somewhere in the upper 30s, how much more, how much better is your case to the committee? And I agree, that is the biggest metric they look at. And as you correctly said, it's not the only thing. They still look at RPI. They still look at strength of schedule. They still look at your record. How many games did you win? Where did you finish in your conference? Who did you beat and where did you beat them? They'll hopefully look, we're all assuming they'll look at Jimmy Witt, in Isaiah Joe and his absence for those five games. You're hoping they'll do that and put some weight and some merit to that.
Mm-hmm.
But net rankings does matter, probably more than anything else. How high can you get? If you're 43 today and you keep winning two or three more games, could you climb to 35, 6, 7? How far could you climb?
So on bracketmatrix.com, which is probably the best website concerning with bracketology because it has everyone's bracket, who matters, who makes brackets, who is a bracketologist. Arkansas was in five brackets. Now they're in eight, so they're climbing a little bit. But you got to continue to win. You got to continue to get things on track. You got to beat Texas A&M College Station, and you got to at least win. I'm in the impression of three. Some people think two. We'll see what happens.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd, they just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tom, Jimmy Witt goes off for 20-plus points for the first time in over a month. How important is his scoring output going to be in College Station this weekend and in Nashville next week?
Yeah, it's always large. Texas A&M's got that big front line. They're riding a swell after becoming the only team to beat Auburn at Auburn Arena this year. You could just tell in his interviews he gave Monday how much the senior day meant to him and finishing strong in front of the home crowd. And he took it to him. He scored 22 down in Baton Rouge, and he was just very aggressive, much like the entire team's mindset in that game. Very aggressive. It's a perfect formula. You shoot 50%, you commit five turnovers, you hang within five on the boards. That's the script for this squad to get a win.
So I'm watching the end of that game last night when LSU started to play a little full court, little half court press. Arkansas looked lost at times, and they really sped them up, and Arkansas took some ill-advised shots. If you're Buzz Williams and Texas A&M and an opponent that Arkansas faces in the SEC tournament, you're pressing Arkansas, right?
I'm sure they have it in their repertoire, and there are times when I think you can employ that. Arkansas didn't have a lot of trouble breaking the press. In fact, I don't recall the one where Joe got trapped in the corner and lost the ball that turned into a turnover, and they only had five in the game. But you're right, they did speed them up, and I think there was a couple of ill-advised early attacks at the rim, and they were passes to Ethan Henderson when it looked like he wasn't quite ready or he was a step behind where Harrison Jones thought he would be. So, all in all, yeah, certainly LSU rallied and got the game a lot closer than it had been using that press. And it did have a weird feel and tempo to it. And Arkansas, even when they would break it successfully and then keep the ball out and attack late in the clock, it did change the pace of the game to LSU's favor. But they held on, and they overcame missing eight consecutive free throws. I mean, that's what really was going on during that time period when LSU closed the game.
You mentioned Isaiah Joe. He had 11 points in the game, but eight of those from the free throw line. He only made one shot from the floor. Was this because of LSU's defense, or was it just not clicking last night for Isaiah Joe?
Yeah, one of seven shooting, and I'm sure they devoted a man to him, but he just wasn't the primary scorer that Arkansas needed last night. At least he recognized that his shot was off, and he didn't just keep shooting. When it came scoring time in the second half, late in the first half, they were going with Mason Jones and Witt and, Desi Sills driving in there sometimes too. But, it's a great sign that you can have one of your premium scorers have a really off night And he did some good things defensively, and you still win a game handily by 9 points.
Got to go on the road to A&M. They beat Auburn last night. How difficult is it going to be to get a win in College Station on Saturday?
It's going to be tough. They're going to crash the glass. I mean, with Nebo and Flag and all their guys, and then they've got some Wendell Mitchell. They're coming on, and they've been a solid team, and they're ahead of Arkansas in the conference standings. Arkansas really needs to win. I think if they lose it, it's going to be really hard to find their way into the tournament. And I keep harping on this with you guys, just a couple of other wins along the way, you know, win South Carolina, win Auburn, you know, maybe you're in there, maybe your ticket's already punched. But the one thing they got to wait and see what happens is the missing Isaiah Joe games, how much credence the committee gives Arkansas on that.
We're talking with Tom Murphy here on the Morning Rush. Tom joins us every Tuesday and Thursday at 7:15. Tom, what about the free throws last night, man? Arkansas could have won that game by 20 plus. They ended up only winning by 9. You have to be a little concerned, especially how they missed a ton of free throws last night down the stretch in that ball game.
Yeah, 8 in a row, as I mentioned, which is crazy. The problem, you know, Ethan Henderson's not a good free throw shooter, and they got the ball to him for some dunks. But LSU also wisely fouled him a lot of times, and so he was, 4 of 9, not a good night. But Desi Sills was the confounding one. He missed 4 in a row in that 0-for-8 stretch. You could hear the frustration in Eric Musselman's voice in the post-game radio when he was talking about, you know, they could have scored 115 points last night. And that's true. They missed the free throws. But when Jones and Joe are on the line, it's usually a pretty good outcome. And Jimmy Witt, he was 8 of 12, so he shot the exact team mark last night, 66.7. And there's just not going to be many games where Henderson gets to the line 9 times. I'll tell you all this. We complain when Arkansas doesn't get calls or when calls impact games that we feel, you know, were negative to Arkansas. Last night, they were the benefit of the call. I thought there was a lot of non-calls in the first 10 minutes or so that went in their favor, and it kind of was a tone setter, and it went in Arkansas's, strongly in Arkansas's favor in this case.
Tommy just beamed here in the studio.
No,
Tom.
I mean, there's just no question that the foul trouble LSU got into early in the game with, you know, with Days and Smart, some of those guys picking up 2 fouls in the first 10 minutes of the ball game, that's what put LSU in the position they were in. That's ultimately what won Arkansas the game.
Well, obviously, yeah, foul trouble was a huge deal, and there were some tic-tac fouls and all that, and it just seemed like it was in Arkansas's favor. And there, I can recall a bunch of games over the years where it wasn't, but in last night's case, it was a big impact. I agree with you, Tommy.
But, I mean, you know, Arkansas had 20 fewer fouls called on them and shot 29 more free throws. If that had been the other way around, I wasn't even coming into work today, you know, because the phone lines were going to – I knew what it'd be like for 3 hours. I mean – sometimes it just goes the other way, and I thought LSU was the more aggressive team last night, particularly out of the gate.
That's the case.
Defensively. Defensively more aggressive.
They were defensively more aggressive. The refs called them on it. And I tell you, there was a whole lot of drives in that game where the shots were blocked, but there was contact. And, you know, sometimes Arkansas would get the whistle, and sometimes LSU wouldn't. But I tell you what, guys, I was down there a few years ago for a game at LSU. It was the Ben Simmons year, where I thought it was so lopsided. Every time he drove, they were blowing the whistle, and Arkansas got a lot of non-calls, very similar to last night.
Yeah, I think back to just last season, Tom, when they won that game in Baton Rouge, where it looked like that whatever Arkansas did, they were going to get a ticky-tack foul call them, and then our LSU players could tackle Isaiah Joe, and they still wouldn't get a foul call. But as you mentioned, it looked like that Arkansas was the beneficiary of some calls last night. Tom, I asked Mason Jones in the post-game press conference about him potentially winning the SEC Player of the Year, and he answered it. He said, "I think I deserved it, but I'm gonna let my games talking." Hold on, I'm trying to find this quote. He said, "I do think I deserve the award, but I'm gonna control what I can control, and I'm gonna let God handle that." This is his 8th 30-point game, and Tom, what I think we have to remember, this is not a most valuable player trophy. Like this, the award is completely separate. This is the SEC Player of the Year. From the guy that was like 265 coming out of high school to where he is now, I just, and maybe this is the homerish graduate of U of A coming out of me, I honestly think he deserves this award. What are your thoughts on that, on another 30-plus point performance?
Well, he deserves votes for it. I mean, and if enough people think that his play warranted, I mean, he's going to end up leading the league in scoring by a pretty handy margin, it looks like, then he will get votes. Now, this conference is kind of dyed in the cloth. You know, Kentucky basketball, you know, is where it's at. And the best player on the Kentucky team quite often has won MVP. I would make it also, Reggie Perry has a fine case in my view, but Emmanuel Quickly has carried Kentucky in this long hot stretch they've been on. When the shot clock gets down, Emmanuel Quickly is the guy they go to, and he's made a ton of big shots. And I think he's going to get a lot of merit too. But I do believe that between Quickly and Perry and Jones, you've got your highest vote getters, and clearly, you know, first team all SEC material.
What about the injury he looked like he suffered? Looked like a sprained ankle, and I should have asked that in the press conference as well, and I don't think it was addressed last night. He had ice on his ankle when Watford dove for the ball, and it looked like it landed. It wasn't malicious intent or anything, yeah. But is that concerning that he might not be fully healthy heading into College Station?
It might be a little rickety, but he did come back in that game and had one of his patented hard drives to the hole where there's contact, and he manages to, you know, squiggle it in there somehow. But you know, it'll probably swell up on him a little. He was limping pretty good, but man, Mason Jones has rebounded from a whole lot of hard falls, kind of Desi Sills like, a lot of hard falls, sometimes down on the floor. I mean, the Georgia game, he was cramping up and couldn't finish it after a beautiful second half. But you know, I suspect Mason Jones is going to go out there and give it what he's got for the Razorbacks on Saturday.
All right, we've talked about a lot of scenarios, how to get to the tournament, crawl your way back up on the bubble, all that. But let's just talk about what we think they're going to do, regardless of the outcome of the wins or losses. This has been a Jekyll and Hyde team to some degree, Tom. What do you think they will do with one game left in the regular season and at least an SEC tournament in front of them? What do you think the next 2, 3, 4 ball games, whatever you foresee, what does that hold for Arkansas in your opinion?
Just need to look better. Need to win game. I mean, if they win the road game at A&M and they win their opening round game in the SEC tournament, then you've got a perfect definition of a bubble team. And I tell you, a lot of times the analysts will have a team out, but the committee sees something, and it could be those missing Joe games. You know, I know they beat TCU without Joe the first time, but then when he missed those 5 in a row, it was 0-for-5. It was a collapse against Auburn, the home loss against Mississippi State on the last second tip-in. The committee may give great value to that. That gets them past a Richmond or a North Carolina State or, you know, these other teams of Virginia. The crew last night pointed out that Arkansas has got a better net ranking than the national champion Virginia. So I would not want to lose to A&M and lose my first round game at the tournament. I think that would give you the committee a clear case to say, nah, not qualified. But if they win at A&M, win a game or two in the tournament, then I think they're right there. And the X factor of Isaiah Joe's injury could get them in.
So do you think they win at A&M, and how many games do you think they win in Nashville?
Well, I would like to see who they're paired against in Nashville first before I make a prediction. It's going to be so hard to win at A&M. I'll say this. If they keep the rebounding battle within 6 and they shoot higher than 48% from the field, they'll win the game.
Tom, I was just looking at the NCAA selection committee just to see who's on. Mitch Barnhart, who happens to reside as the AD at University of Kentucky, is on that. So you don't have a situation where you had at the College Football Playoff Committee where Jeff Long was the commissioner of it at one point. I wish Arkansas had someone on that committee that would be in their favor, except we know they'd be escorted out of the room any time they topped Arkansas.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, there's nothing you can do to avoid that, and who knows? You'd like to think it's all, you know, nonpartisan people who will look at the metric. I'm sure Isaiah Joe's injury will be brought up, and you just need to finish strong, to give yourself a chance.
All right, Tom, let me top off the interview with this. So Tommy and I were discussing this yesterday, just looking at the bracket. itself. I believe, if I remember this correctly, I think Kyle Declanbaum put this out for KATV and Little Rock, that Arkansas, the only seeds they can get now are the 9 seed, the 10 seed, and the 11 seed. 11 seed, you'd have to start on Wednesday. 9 and 10, you wouldn't start till that Thursday. Unfortunately, the 9 seed plays the 8 seed, and then the next game they would match up against Kentucky. So do you think it would actually be better, Tom, if Arkansas entered the SEC tournament in the as a 10 seed, so you would avoid Kentucky potentially until you met them in the championship, assuming they got that far, which I don't think they're going to. But do you want to try and avoid Kentucky at all costs until the last possible moment?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if you beat Kentucky in the SEC tournament, that could be your ticket puncher. You know, if you show well in an 8-9 game and beat Kentucky, that could be exactly what you need. I mean, it would be a lot better than beating 2-seed. I guess it would be Auburn at this point. I'm not really sure. I guess Auburn and LSU both lost.
Yeah,
but anyway,
they're tied at this point right now, so it's going to depend on what happens on Saturday.
Right, yeah. So it would be better for Arkansas to have a win over Kentucky than it would be to say, beat LSU again. But I don't know if it's going to take that. But it certainly would be a strong closing argument if they could. I worry for them to play three nights in a row. I just feel like the thinness of their roster would not do well in that scenario. So I would argue that finishing 8-9 would be a better situation for them.
He is Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can read his stuff on Whole Hog Sports. Tom, as always, appreciate you joining us on a Thursday, and have a good weekend, man.
Yep, maybe Hog baseball will rebound against South Alabama. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.
Sounds good, man. Get a recap from Tom with the Arkansas baseball team on Tuesday. We are brought to you this morning by Breeden RV. It is a recruiting Thursday. Got Richard Davenport going to join us in 30 minutes. So any recruiting questions you have, you can call or text in 877-377-6963. March Madness is back at Breeden RV, and that means you're going to get great basketball games and great camping weather. Free satellite system with every new RV purchase. And as always, they have new Traveler trailers starting at just $99 a month. New fifth wheels starting for under $300 a month. And the best selection of motorhomes in the area. They also are accepting your trades, and they'll give you top dollar for them. So make it a fast break and head over to Breeden RV in Alma Highway and Van Buren, or visit them on the web at BreedenRV.com. Where your adventures begin.
I can't see what you have the bracket up for the SEC tournament.
I do, yes. Go ahead.
Okay, so if you ended up winning, and I guess if Missouri won, you could still be the 11 seed, right? If you beat A&M, you could still finish up. There's a scenario where you could go and be the 11.
So here's what has to happen, Tommy. You would have to lose, from my understanding, you would have to lose against Texas A&M, and Missouri would have to win because they have the tiebreaker over you, and that's contention upon so many scenarios. If Auburn wins this Saturday, right, because Auburn lost to Mizzou earlier this year, and you unfortunately lost. So that's the scenario where you would be an 11 seed. You'd be a 10 seed, Tommy, if Mizzou won or lost on Saturday, but you won because you'd be still one game ahead of him in the standings.
Here was my point. If you could win against A&M and end up as the 11, you played Vanderbilt in the Wednesday of Death at the SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would move on to play the 6 seed, which is likely to be Mississippi State. A game where you came up from a tap at the basket at the horn to winning that game on your home floor. If you won that game, you would move on to play potentially LSU if they end up being the 3 seed. Now, that just, I'm just saying, beating Vanderbilt, if you can't beat Vanderbilt, you don't deserve to be in any tournament anyway.
Correct.
Beating Mississippi State seems more likely than maybe beating some of these other options, just because they've beaten you twice. I don't think they can beat Arkansas a third time.
Mm-hmm.
I might be wrong. Reggie Perry's is a man. He's a grown man. He's a handful. But I think Arkansas could beat Mississippi State. They nearly did it the last time. And then we saw what they did against LSU last night. They could be the 3 seed, or you could end up, I guess, with Auburn there too. That just seems like a more likely scenario to me.
I just wonder with the additional game, Tommy, and I like that scenario. If that was a 2-game scenario to the semis, I'd like that better. But the fact that you're tacking on an additional game with Vandy, with potentially Mississippi State or South Carolina, and then potentially LSU or Auburn, because it's weird right now. You got a bunch of ties going to the SEC. Auburn and LSU are tied for second. And then the game Tommy was talking about, Mississippi State and South Carolina are currently tied for sixth. So that scenario to a potential semifinal championship may sound easier, but I'm just curious, does the extra game, does it hurt it? Does that completely wipe out the scenario where you don't want to do it? I just know, as weird as this sound, the seed you probably want to avoid most is the highest one you can get right now, which is number 9. Now, Tom brought up a good point that I haven't really thought about to this point. If you do get that 9 seed and you play Alabama or Texas A&M or Tennessee, depending on how things shake out this weekend, you would get Kentucky in that quarterfinals matchup. So the winning aspect that he mentioned, that'd be your biggest win on your schedule. You beat Kentucky in essentially a home game in Bridgestone Arena. That's got to be a marquee game, because then you look at Arkansas at this point. They would have a marquee road win, Indiana, a marquee home win, LSU, and then a marquee neutral site win, which would be Kentucky. I just can't see them. Like, Quickly and Richards, the way they're playing, and man, they turn it on. Cal and those boys, they turn it on during the SEC tournament. They are very tough out. Plus, you got 18,000-plus screaming, annoying, stupid Kentucky fans.
Home court for them.
I just don't see a scenario where Arkansas wins that basketball game. You should have won it back when you played at home in February. I just don't see a scenario, Tommy, when they win that basketball game. I guess it was January, excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, if you need wins, I'm just looking for a path to get more wins.
Correct. By no means is this going to be easy. Like, this is not, again, you are more probable to an NIT berth at this point than an NCAA tournament berth. But our job on this
like
show.
Like 90-10.
Correct. I'd probably say that's fair. Now, if they win against Texas A&M, what does that shift to? I think it's like 25-75? Nope. No, it's not that high. 15-85?
Okay. 80-20 is what I was going to say.
80-20? Okay. So it's just a little bit more. Our goal on the show.
You lose and it goes to zero.
Yeah, no, it's a limit because you're just not going to win the SEC tournament. You'd love for them to get hot and all of a sudden just go through the SEC tournament, kind of like Joe Lunardi was saying yesterday, but it's just not going to happen. That being said, I think Arkansas on this list right now, looking at every single team, I think Kentucky's the only team you can't beat in the SEC tournament. Now, Auburn's on the fringe where you probably can't beat them, but I mean, as competitive as you played them without Isaiah Joe, I still think they'd probably beat you. But that's, Tommy, I think the Kentucky game's the only game you would not have a shot to win.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
It's a big risk, but it could be the biggest reward.
Yeah, that's a good point. But that's what life's all about. Sometimes big risk leads to big reward.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Chris is in Harrison. Chris, you're on the Morning Rush, man.
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good, Chris.
Good. Glad to hear it. So, one thing that, I've noticed with Musselman, just in different press conferences, he's talked about, like, it's, scouting, preparation, things like that. It feels like down the line, in rematches and in, tournament situations that you're able to kind of, maneuver really quickly and turn the page to the next game. And if you look at in conference play, he's pretty much done that. In rematch games he's lost, he's 3-1. The one loss was against Mississippi State on a tap-in. At the buzzer, I know I was at that game. It tore my heart out. It seems like whenever they play someone the second time around, they play a lot better, and they actually end up kicking their tail. I mean, Missouri was a 10-point win. Tennessee was a 17-point win. LSU, until late, was a rout. So that has to give you some confidence going into the conference tournament that can they pick up two wins? It looks like, they can, because it looks like the second time they play some teams, they play much better, and in a lot of cases, they're clearly the better team on the floor. So I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, guys.
Chris, thanks for the call, man. Tommy, what's the one commonality between those rematches that he just mentioned?
Well, Mississippi State they lost twice to, but
But what's of the 3-1 rematches that he referred to, the rematches he referred to where they go 3-1, what's the common theme that goes along with those rematches?
Probably Isaiah Joe.
They're all at home.
Yeah.
Beat Missouri at home, beat Tennessee at home. You lost to Mississippi State, one at home, and you beat LSU at home. So I'm not saying that Eric Musselman and his staff didn't make adjustments and stuff, but this team has shown that they're much better at home than on the road. Can they get hot in Nashville? We've seen it in 2015. We've seen it in 2017. Well, you see it in 2020. This team, out of those three, is the least talented of the three. But they have
better at home,
but they have the most to play for.
They lost, what, four conference games in a row at home?
Yeah, but that's an anomaly with Isaiah Joe being out, I think, right?
I would give a lot of that. I think some of it's who they played, because they played Auburn at home, Mississippi State in that stretch. I think they were.
I think Kentucky as well.
You played some of the better teams in the league at home. I think some of this we still boil down to they haven't beaten a lot of the teams that are up in that top four. They beat LSU last night. They hadn't beaten Florida. They hadn't beaten Auburn. They hadn't beaten Kentucky. Hadn't beaten Mississippi State. You know, the better teams in this league, they beat A&M early. Like, first, right out of the box. Like, that's first conference game, right?
Correct.
We'll see if they can do it Saturday. But the MO on this team, I mean, the reality is, when you just look at the facts, they've beaten the best teams in this league. They've achieved their 7 wins to this point on the middle to bottom half of the league for the most part. That's where they feasted.
That's why a win in the quarterfinals against an Auburn, against an LSU, and I guess it depends on how you end up shaking out. You could potentially play like Mississippi State or South Carolina if you get the 11th seed. Again, the SEC tournament seedings right now are in flux. Sometimes you go into Saturday and you have a pretty good knowledge of what's going to happen. The only thing that's rock solid right now as far as the tournament goes is Kentucky's going to be number one, and I think Vanderbilt's going to be number 16. Outside of that, it's kind of, did I say 16?
14,
excuse me. Outside of that, it's pretty up in the air as far as the seeding goes. Arkansas, you can be number 9, you can be number 10, you can be number 11. Tommy's laid out this scenario where you might want to be number 11. You play a putrid Vanderbilt team, then you match up against Mississippi State or South Carolina, and then you potentially play LSU or Auburn, depending on those shakeout. That could be a fun scenario to get to the semifinals, and that could potentially give you 3 wins, which you need. Then there's scenario...
That's a better deal for total number of wins.
Correct. Then there's scenario where you're the 10th seed. If you were to win this Saturday, you would be the 10th seed, and you'd play most likely Tennessee or Alabama, and then you'd face off against Auburn or LSU in the second round. If you became the 9th seed, you play the 8th seed, which is a couple different teams, and then you'd face off against Kentucky. Kentucky is a surefire. That is the only team you know for sure that will be meeting the 8 and 9 seed in that second round game. So I'm of the belief that you don't want the 9 seed. Now, again, Tom Murphy laid out for us a little earlier, that's your biggest win to date, that if you could get. But I just don't think you want to face Kentucky in the quarterfinals.
I'd like to figure out a way, and I guess you need Missouri to win. Arkansas, I don't want any scenario where Arkansas, you feel better by losing, because I don't think that's ever reality. Arkansas beats A&M, and somehow they still end up at the 11 because they lose the tiebreaker to Missouri. You get a do-nothing win over Vanderbilt. And listen, if you can't beat Vanderbilt, you don't deserve to go to the tournament anyway. So if you're worried about playing Vanderbilt in that one extra game. Now, the one extra game, the thought might be, well, I don't want to burn their legs up one more game. I get that. I mean, this isn't a team that's going to win the tournament anyway, win the SEC tournament. You're just trying to carve out a narrow path here to a 12 seed. That's all you're trying to figure out, how to get to Dayton. That's all you're trying to do right now.
And you want the Arkansas team to get excited.
One more regular season win might be enough if you get to 23 versus 22.
But it's just a matter, Tommy, like what's better? What's a better scenario if they were to beat Vanderbilt, then Mississippi State, and then lose in the quarters if they were only to play two and beat a better, or would it? That's what I'm asking. Would it be better to get 2 wins or three wins?
Two higher quality wins or three
mediocre? And it's just depending on how you look at it. It depends on what we do the net rankings. And again, you still don't have
you may go backwards in the net rankings by beating Vanderbilt.
Yeah. So that's something you have to think about as well.
I don't know that that's true, but I mean, it will help you.
Do they have a neutral site win that I'm forgetting? That's pretty solid. I'm trying to think. I don't think they played a lot of neutral site games this year. Yeah, Georgia Tech was in Atlanta, in Georgia Tech's arena. Can you think of anything? I don't think of it. I'd have to go back and look at the schedule.
Hang on. I got the schedule right here.
I don't think they have any.
North Little Rock against Valparaiso.
That's not. Nope. Don't mention that as a marquee knock or neutral site win.
I'm just going through the games here. Nope.
Yeah, because I don't. They're playing in Vegas next year with Louisville and some other teams. I know that's a big-time tournament.
All right, I'll cover that one.
That they'll participate in, but you need a...
I'll fall on the sword. I'll go.
Yeah, you need a big-time neutral site win. I honestly don't want to go. I don't have any... That's one of the places that like guys are just like, they expect that everyone wants to... I don't have any desire to go to Vegas. You're welcome to go.
Okay.
Also, I'll run back on... This will be the one time I actually want to run the board. Right. Yeah, Jenkins, you can
go. I'll run the strip of Vegas with you.
Yeah. Emphasis on strip. So I Vegas just doesn't do it for me. I don't know.
How many times you been?
Zero.
Doesn't do for you, but you've never been there.
Okay. You know me. I
Vegas
save my
has
money.
Changed a lot though. But yeah. Anyway, we're getting off on a tangent.
Okay. So yeah, those are kind of the scenarios we laid out as far as the Arkansas path goes in the SEC tournament.
Just win, baby.
Yeah, just win. Al Davis. That's what Joe Lunardi said yesterday. He said he brought back Al Davis and said that.
And you know what? If this ends up an NIT team, which I think there's like a 90% chance this is an NIT team, that's what we thought they were in November.
They are who they thought they were.
They're going to end up about 11th, which is what they were predicted. And they're going to end up in the NIT, which is about what we were hoping for. We were sitting here, me and neighbors, trying to figure out a path to the NIT. Well, maybe they could win 17 or 18 games, and maybe this, and going through it. We didn't even know they could get to the NIT 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just it's all going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Correct. So, other bracket, as we close down the show here, we're still updating you with the most annoying Arkansas sports media member bracket. Tommy, unfortunately,
am I out?
You didn't make it out of the first round, buddy. No. You
Is that good or bad?
It depends on how you look at it.
I don't ever want to lose, though.
So, Tommy Smith edged you out 52-48. So
can I get
really
a recount?
Close. It's really
Is
close.
Any hanging chads?
What is
should have talked
chad?
About refereeing more.
What is a hanging chad? Yeah,
clearly you weren't
that.
Around for that.
No, I was not.
Bush and Gore.
Okay.
Yeah, they had these paper ballots or these punch card ballots in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an argument before the Supreme Court that all these needed to be examined because the piece of paper that when you punch through on the ballot before we did it electronically didn't fall off. And there were hanging chads, they called it. So we had these old people with you know, magnifying glasses looking at these ballots determining who's going to be president of the United States by hand.
How about that?
That's the term hanging chad for you youngins.
How about
there.
That? Jenkins, you kicked Tara Talmadge pretty good. You won 64% to 36%.
Yeah.
I beat out Kevin Taylor. I'm trying to find that percentage.
Kevin's a great guy, but again,
it's about annoyance. So
total missed, you know, total botch by the committee on the seating.
Random. I'll do it next year. Yeah, I've got enough flack about that. So I won't.
Random, but he gets the easy draw, folks.
So I got a couple death looks at press conference, press row last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did that make you uncomfortable?
Not really. It was, everyone was cool about it. They thought it was funny. So,
I don't think everyone's cool about it.
I think that,
I've
well,
had phone calls. So yeah. I don't think everyone's cool.
Well, and they can grow a you know what. So,
what's this kid, what's this young punk doing over there? Who's he think he is?
Yeah. Well,
he thinks he's Ty Richardson.
That's the name that was given to me. It's on
youngest
my first
radio host in the state of Arkansas.
Yeah, he's the youngest radio host in Arkansas.
I wish that boded well. See, you mentioned that. I was walking into the game yesterday, Tommy, and these two older gentlemen, as I was walking by, they say, "Hey, Ty," and I look around and they're like, "Hey, you and Tommy do a great job." I said, "Thanks, man." Mm. So, when does it translate from the older 50-plus gentleman to the young, cute 20s? As a guy that's done this a while, does it ever?
Never.
Never? Yeah. Okay.
Never.
Ever?
Ever. You're in the wrong business for that.
So what do I need to do for
that? You need
to
go get on the top 40 station.
Okay. Or become like a lawyer or doctor or something of that nature. Is that...
Well, then you wouldn't be following your love of radio.
Yeah.
But your passion to talk sports.
I couldn't do music.
Your desire
either.
To get up at 4:20 every morning.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.